Hola, it's Steph from the island, Zaidi man. Would you like to say hello to the nice listeners, darling?
Hello, nice listeners.
So, we got a letter, which I thought I would do. We just came back from sunning a little. It says, "Dear Christina and Steph, you know, you'd think that if I was this relaxed, having been on vacation for about 10 days now, that I would be over the petty hyper-competitiveness that rears up whenever your name comes first. Do you think that that's innate tendency? There's just no way to." Okay, good. Then I don't feel bad about it. All right. "Thank you so much for the great work that you are doing with Free Domain Radio and Ask a Therapist. Recently, I realized that I have had five periods of major intellectual breakthroughs in my life, the latest of which is your rational psychology approach. Directly below, I briefly, well, describe each of these breakthroughs. I think that in order to make it clear to me that Free Domain Radio really is right up there with the great minds in history, as if you needed the external validation. You can skip that part, however, go directly to the question I have asked a therapist concerning the distinction and relation between lack of willpower and depression. The question itself is quite short, but I've also added some biographical data that may be relevant. And this is a grad student who's working in philosophy, and I won't go through some of the more technical stuff that he's got in terms of philosophy, but of course I can post it on the board if I get his permission to do so. Although the one part that I thought was interesting, he said, it's not just the rational psychology that I learned from the podcast. Even in areas where I thought I was already quite well-versed in, such as economics, politics, history, and philosophy, Steph, with almost every podcast, brings me at least a new insight, an important and deep clarification, a new way of looking at things, and so on. I remember when first listening to some podcasts, I, as a trained philosopher, was a bit skeptical about Steph's ventures into philosophy. Steph is smart and well-meaning, but he is only an amateur philosopher, and what he says seems rather simplistic, and he doesn't know all the things that philosophers through the ages have written about the stuff he's talking about, and so on, until I started to notice that I couldn't really find fault with what he was saying, that a lot of philosophy things only really started to make sense when listening to Steph, and that I was confusing clarity with simplicity, an all too common mistake, of course, and so I grudgingly concluded, damn it, he is simply right. Don't feel bad, I actually feel that about Christina all the time." So, not the end of the world. So, anyway, we'll get to his sort of real question. He said, "Lack of willpower or depression. Okay, so I have learned a lot about rational psychology and a lot of other things, but naturally, there are still some difficult problems for me, one of which concerns the distinction between lack of willpower on the one hand and depression on the other. How do you determine whether your problem is one of a lack of willpower or of depression? In other words, what direction is the causal relation in? Do you feel miserable, or rather just bereft of energy and life, because you were lazy and don't get anything done? Or don't you get anything done because you were depressed? Naturally, this need not be a strict either-or situation. This is an especially tricky question, because it is so tempting to make excuses for your laziness, to take the easy way out by calling it the result of depression. I hope that you will find it interesting to discuss this question in one of your podcasts. If you do, but prefer some biographical data to make the question more concrete and real, embedded in a life, then below please find some info about my own situation that prompted this question. If you use the biographical data in the podcast, then please don't use my real name." Actually, this guy is real. His real name is Bab. So we can't use Bab. We'll use Bab instead. He's not. Real name's not Bab. It's Bob. "Biographical data. I'm writing a PhD dissertation, or so I tell myself and others. The truth is, I have hardly written anything in the past 6 months. Oh, don't feel bad, neither is Shakespeare. And not much before that, either. 3 months ago, I thought it would be a good idea to just quit the dissertation for a while and write a paper in another field, economics, for this conference I hope to attend, and as a start for a possible alternative for my current dissertation. I thought it would be a good idea to have a backup, and also because the topic is not so frustratingly difficult as that of my dissertation. I thought it could get me past the writing impasse. The only thing I had to do before the conference was write a 2-page outline, and now 3 months later, it's still not finished. I have dozens of pages of notes, but I'm still stuck on the very first sentence of the actual outline. Writing down notes is easy, and I have literally hundreds of pages of notes for full of ideas for my dissertation. But writing an actual paper is different. It seems that with every single sentence, there are so many possibilities, so many alternative ways of putting something, all with their own ramifications for the rest of the paper and its structure. And so while writing you constantly have to make these small decisions, stick with them and go on, and possibly later review and revise them. Ha, never. Oh, wait, that's me. But I simply don't seem to be capable of making those decisions anymore, or of putting the effort into making them anyway. I have in the past written a lot of papers, some of which approach the length of a dissertation, so I can do it. Also, I already have about 200 pages of structured text for this dissertation, mostly written in my spare time before I graduated. Besides my dissertation and this paper, I have ideas, and the notebooks to prove it, for other papers in philosophy and economics, for screenplays and short stories, for a comedy routine, and so on, but I simply don't get anything done anymore. I will sit in front of the computer for a while trying to translate my notes into an actual text. And when it doesn't go as smoothly as is usually the case, I will struggle for a bit, then give up for a while, sit on the couch, read or listen to something, or just keep smoking cigarettes, and then try to find... And then try again, only to find myself unable to do it. This process occurred a lot, especially last year. These days, I've simply grown so lazy or demoralized that I will quit trying after the first failure, and more often, simply stop trying at all. And so days and weeks and months go by without me actually producing something of value. I'm just constantly thinking about it, feeling immensely guilty for wasting my life and talents like this, which only adds to the misery of the situation. Now, he's got some more, but you have to shower. So would you had some thoughts about this. Did you want to sort of mention about this sort of paralysis? You have a tougher time writing than I do. So...
Writing doesn't come easily for me. I hate writing, and my writing is always, it's not, it's very concrete, it's very factual, it's very report-like, and then that's partly my training in psychology, where everything you write has to be supported by at least two factual pieces of evidence.
Sorry, I didn't even bother with one, but go ahead.
And writing for me has always been very difficult. But I think for this, for Bab, I think the my first thought when Steph was telling me about it, I didn't actually get a chance to read the email or the post. Steph told me about it, and as we were discussing it, my first thought, and it was very, very vivid for me, was he just doesn't want to do it. He just doesn't want to do his thesis. He's got tons and tons of written material already that he could sort of reorganize and compose something new with. And he sits there and he looks at it, and I just, my gut feeling is that he just doesn't want to do it. He's, his block is one of apathy. He's apathetic about it. He's not motivated for it. He's not passionate about it. And so he looks at it. He's not inspired by it. He just doesn't want to do it. And I think he's trying to force himself to do something that he doesn't want to do.
You've had the same thought about doing a PhD, right? Because you want to have one more degree than me. And so you've had the same. We've talked about it, but the thing is that you can't really find a particular topic that you feel would be that interesting to write about for years, right? So.
Precisely. I mean, a friend of mine once told me, she had a master's degree as well, and she said the only thing that separates us from those people who have a PhD is that they are more obsessive than we are.
PhD and OCD.
And frankly, I don't know. I mean, what would be the value for Bob to have the PhD? What is it that he wants to achieve with the PhD? What is it that he wants? And obviously, the desire for the PhD... isn't something that he's passionate about. I don't know if there's some external reason for that, for validation from other people, for some kind of... feeling that you're completing something. I'm not sure, but it's not something that he wants for himself. That's sort of what I'm getting. Now, again, I need two pieces of evidence, according to my training, to support this, and right now I don't have two pieces of evidence. All I have is what he says in his post here, and a gut feeling that says he doesn't want to do it. So this is just an assumption that I'm making, just having had a brief discussion about this with Steph before he even read the letter out loud.
It also sounds like he's laboring under a kind of obligation here. And I think there's something else that's going on, though, which is pretty significant, which might blow the case open, so to speak, as far as to the mystery, which is a larger question that he's quite right to ask about willpower versus depression, right? I mean, is he just lacking willpower to get this thing done, and thus he's ending up depressed because he's just not applying himself? But writing is one of these mysterious things that happens or it doesn't. Right. I mean, you can't force yourself. Like, I know this from creative writing. I mean, you can't force yourself to write creatively. You can't. You just can't. It either happens or it doesn't. And writer's block is famous. I've never really suffered from it. Oh, I should say, if I have even one drink, I can't write to save my life. And so I think that he's trying to force himself to do something that he just can't do. It's like insomnia. You can't make yourself fall asleep. You can't make yourself write or come up with ideas. And the option paralysis seems to me to occur because he's lacking a structure. And I think the big thing that's occurring for him, let's say, you know, for the sake of argument and with no personal stake in the matter, that I'm completely right about, you know, this is the philosophy stuff, that I'm right, or more or less right, about what it is that I talk about in the podcast. Well, if that's the case, then he's basically going to have some pretty serious questions about the quality of his education to date. If these podcasts are revealing something to him important in the realms of philosophy, and I don't go into all of the proofs and stuff that I worked out in my own graduate studies for what it is that I'm doing, but if it is the case that I've come up with some fairly valuable truths that are correct and accurate that he's never heard before while studying philosophy at a graduate level on his way to do a PhD, and he's stuck in ABD land, right? All but dissertation, which I've certainly known other people to get stuck in before as well. I think one of the issues that's coming up for him is, well, if Steph's right about this philosophy stuff that he talks about, and I've never heard any of these ideas before, and all of the people around me claim to be philosophy professors and philosophy teachers, and yet they have not come up with the proofs that I have come up with, nor have they really commented in the absence of those proofs and been working towards it, then he's kind of in a fake Orama cavalcade, right? Where people are just making up knowledge or pretending to know things that they don't, in that sort of sophistic, Socratic, what Socrates criticized quite heavily in ancient Athens, the people who claim for an appearance of knowledge rather than knowledge itself, then I think one of the reasons that he's feeling depressed and lethargic is it's a pretty significant thing for him that he's come across somebody who has some significant answers with philosophy that he's never heard while studying philosophy for 8 years or so. And he's probably read quite a bit. He talks about stuff that he's read earlier. So that's fairly important. And a lot of people who've read Ayn Rand or other kinds of philosophers have that same sort of problem when they run into professional or academic philosophy, which is that there are people who've got some pretty good answers out there who are not studied as part of any philosophical curriculum. And that's a pretty significant thing, I think, that occurs for people in this kind of environment, that the truth is out there, but it's not in academics. In fact, it's specifically ignored or rejected in academics. And I mean, you know, could he do a PhD on the podcast? Absolutely he could, I think. I think there's enough material there for dozens of PhDs. But an honorary doctorate from Free Domain Radio might not get him exactly where he wants to go. But
that depends on where it is he wants to go.
It depends. Yeah, why does he want the PhD? Well, does he want to teach? Well, he's going to have to play the game for quite a long time to do that, and then is he ever going to have a voice? It's one of the reasons I didn't go on to do a PhD, was because it's a sort of very problem that the truths that I were pursuing were specifically rejected by professional philosophers, by the academic philosophers. So I think that has some significant effects on his motivation, and I think the fact that he's still excited by the truth to the point where he sits and listens to podcasts and is excited by these ideas, but can't... And I think gets at an unconscious level that he can't bring this knowledge that he's excited about to bear on his professional studies, I think is quite significant. And I think that unconsciously he's recognizing that if he's interested in the stuff that we talk about here, and if that stuff excites him, but it's going to be specifically rejected by all of the professional philosophers who are going to have to grant him his degree, then that says something quite important, either about what we're doing here in Free Domain Radio or the professional philosophers that he's studying under. And I think that is one of the reasons that his paralysis is occurring. But let's hear a little more from this. And sorry, Christina has to go and shower to get ready for dinner. But let's hear a little bit more from this gentleman who writes more about his personal situation so that we can see. And I won't put in any identifying information based on his wishes. He says, I don't currently have any contact with my dissertation advisor. Haven't had so for a year. I wanted to write a first rough draft of the thing on my own. I have a 25-hour-a-week, 3 days, simple and non-demanding job in a hotel, which earns me just enough money to live somewhat comfortably. And then talk to him about that. He knows I am writing The Thing. I love how he describes The Thing, the beast. And has supported and encouraged me when I was still in university, and also being, and also along with other professors, has given me the assurance that intellectually I have what it takes to write one. But now I am very hesitant to contact him before I can actually write again and feel guilty for not having done much of this, that in the past year. Also, when other people, friends, family, ask me about the dissertation or about life in general, I am very evasive and vague, and in the past have also just downright lied about it. I do think that I have the basic ideas and structure of my dissertation and the economics paper in my head and in my notebooks, and that they make sense and are of value, and so, qua overall content, I don't experience much of a problem, although this could be mere ignorance and misplaced optimism and trying to prematurely experience the glory without actually having to do the work. But I can't do it on a micro level, also because that is where you actually have to connect all the dots in a logical structure, solve all the subproblems, and actually write the damn thing. Anyway, that is the major practical problem in my life today. I'm full of ideas, but I don't actually get anything done, the dissertation being the prime example, and I feel my life is passing me by, and I'm simply not enjoying myself at all, and haven't really done so for as long as I can remember. So my question is how I can decide whether the problem is born out of laziness, a lack of willpower, or out of simple writing anxiety, or out of an undiagnosed depression. Below, let me list some facts that may point to either a lack of willpower or to a possible depression. Signs that may indicate depression. Social. I don't have a lot of friends, and have also started to lose some of my old friends through negligence. I don't look forward to any of the social appointments I make. Seeing my girlfriend is the exception to this. And almost always just want to cancel them beforehand, and sometimes do so. When I do go see a movie with friends, then I just want to go home immediately after the movie and not sit and talk and drink afterwards. One sort of exception is playing football, which in the past year was one of the few moments of pure and unbridled pleasure in my life. But I haven't gone and played football for almost 6 weeks now and don't have the energy to bike all the way there, face all the people and play. Last year, I had about a four-month period in which I went to the gym several times a week, but I've also quit that. Lack of libido. Being in bed with my girlfriend is the most wonderful thing in the world, and we tend to spend a lot of what seems like entire days in bed, but I do not feel a strong drive to actually have sex, which naturally makes her somewhat anxious. We do have sex, but not at all as often as what seems normal. She lives on the other side of the ocean. We met him when she was on vacation here last year, and so we only see each other every 2 or 3 months, although we do call or send emails an awful lot. She's also a lot older than I am, which makes it all the more tough for her and us that my sex drive is so low, because she fears I'm simply not attracted to her. I do, however, find her very attractive and keep telling her how beautiful and attractive she is, and I try to show my appreciation. When I think about sex, I almost always think of her, and it's just that I hardly ever think about sex anymore. I have even almost completely stopped looking at girls at all. This started about in the period before I met her, something which I could not have imagined before. We do talk about this issue a lot, though, trying to explore what the reasons or causes can be, how we feel about it, and what the causes of our feelings could be. But we can't come up with a convincing answer either way, which continues the mutual anxiety around it. We talk about almost everything else, too, which is so very wonderful. We are open and honest and curious, and we talk about things we have never talked about with others. She had a horrible, horrible childhood, and as a child, experienced every sort of abuse, with her mom being a sick, sadistic, manipulative, and evil bitch. We talk about this, and I have, also thanks to Free Domain Radio, started to explore and make sense of my own childhood, and only with her do I feel safe and close enough to actually do this. She feels the same way. When we have conflicts, we let it happen, and then later we talk about them, observing each other's and our own reactions and defense mechanisms, talk about their possible origin and nature, try to help each other to break down the barriers, stop when it hurts too much, and then try to go on. Each step brings us closer together, so that at times I really feel like we're two naked souls lying in each other's arms, which is just, wow, so overwhelmingly beautiful. She said some days ago that with me, she is like a child again, and I think that the same holds true for me. Us being so very close and comfortable around each other may, of course, also contribute to the reduced sex drive, although that isn't the case for her to the same extent. To be sure, we also just have a great deal of pure fun together, and we challenge each other intellectually, and we can be very playful together. It is almost like the perfect relationship, except that because of the big age difference, we both realize we have to end it at some point, which frankly sucks ass. Sleeping. When I don't smoke some weed before going to bed, I find it very difficult to fall asleep, although this used to be a lot worse a couple of years ago. when I do smoke a joint before bedtime, I don't smoke joints other than that at those moments. I used to be up until about, sorry, I don't smoke joints other than at those moments. I used to up to about 4 years ago, though. I think it usually takes about 45 minutes to fall asleep, so that's not too bad. But my sleep is lighter then. I also only have or remember dreams when I don't smoke a joint before going to sleep. They're usually about chases and entrapments, but I don't usually remember them in much detail. And in the morning, I have a hard time getting up when there's no pressing reason, an appointment, etc., to do so. I usually oversleep my alarm clock by 2 hours or so and then make myself get out of bed. Usually late, the night before, I begin to get very optimistic and hopeful and energetic about the next day and life in general and all the things I now really am going to do. But then when the alarm clock goes off, that energetic spirit has long since left the body. The bizarre thing is that I don't seem to actually learn from these repetitive experiences. I keep getting energetic and optimistic and full of resolutions the night before, no matter how many times I've experienced the realities the next day. Eating. I have no regular eating pattern. I snack a bit a couple of hours after getting up, and then either have junk food meal or some sandwiches at night, and that's it. I do at times buy a microwave meal to eat at home or at work, but almost never get myself to actually eat it. Signs that may indicate a lack of willpower. As I wrote above, last year I did have a 4-month period in which I made myself go to the gym several times a week, where I would actually force myself to eat a lot and eat healthily and go to sleep before 2 a.m. Moreover, I was happy with and proud of the results. These days, of course, I can almost feel the muscle mass shrinking. So I could make myself go do these things. I did exercise my willpower. And even these days, I can still make myself get up in time when there is a pressing reason, like a formal appointment in the morning or early afternoon. Also, as I said in the past, I have been able to make myself write long and challenging papers. It also used to take a long time, and I missed so many deadlines that it wasn't even funny anymore, but I would get them done, and I was happy with the results and the reviews. Now, after my graduation, I no longer have any external deadlines. I am not writing much anymore. I am no longer exercising my willpower, since there's no direct need to do so anymore. My master's thesis took 2 years to finish, though, with often similar problems as I'm having now. Writing has always been a struggle, as it is for most people, but I used to actually do it and at times even enjoy it. That is a simplest and most important piece of evidence for lack of willpower as the root of my current problems. Because of the resulting guilt and feelings of worthlessness, I then start to enjoy life less and less and stop taking good care of myself and sink further away. Another point is that my former best friend did have a severe depression and an impressive history of psychiatrists, medications, insane family history, failed suicide attempts, electroshock treatment, institutionalizations, and so on to prove it. He finally did end his life about a year after our friendship had ended. My situation is not even remotely like his own private hell was. Furthermore, I do have the willpower to keep my house exceptionally clean and well organized. In fact, this seems to have changed from a means to an end, comfortable living, to an end in itself. I can think of some reasons or causes for my strong desire for cleanliness and organization. The point is that I am capable of doing stuff like that. Finally, this letter itself can be seen as a proof of a lack of willpower as the cause of my writing problems. I wrote this letter in about a day with some prior notes made the week before. So although this is naturally less challenging than writing a dissertation, I can make myself write. Conclusion. There are so many things I want to do with my life, tons of ideas and plans and people, but the gap between my dreams and my reality has never seemed bigger, and I don't know what to do. I don't seem to be able to apply rational psychology to my problems and truly get to the root of it, let alone solve it. What am I missing? Naturally, I'm hoping for you to say, dude, you have depression, get some therapy and take some pills and you're on your way to stardom, because that would absolve me from almost any responsibility. And what I don't want you to say is, dude, you're in a rut and it will only take some effort and willpower to change the routines you've grown accustomed to. And if you can't do that, well, then you're just not up to the tasks you have set for yourself. Other people are also only successful because they're willing to put the effort in, and so should you. It's not easy, but it's the same situation all the other people face too. Or, dude, your problem is that your ambitions are too outlandish, you don't even seem to enjoy writing and you want to make a career out of that, and should seriously consider settling for a lot less. I feel base and dirty writing about my own situation, thinking about how I could have let myself go like this and how I've now come crawling for help rather than fixing the problem myself. I'm 28 and I feel like I've simply never grown up. If you made it all the way to the end of this letter, then thank you so much for reading it, and I hope you will find it worth your while to discuss the problem, preferably without the biographical data, but if need be with the data in one of your podcasts. Well, I hope you don't mind that I have used this data. And I am certainly no professional, and of course it's worth talking to a professional, but I do know enough about depression that you exhibit all the signs. I mean, absolutely all the signs of depression. Paralysis, sleeplessness, inability to move forward, sleeplessness followed by sleeping in, using drugs to fall asleep, a lack of libido, a feeling of futility, a lack of appetite. I mean, there's simply no criteria for depression that I've ever heard of that you are not exhibiting. So yes, you are going through a fairly major episode of depression. And I would not myself worry about willpower at all. Willpower cannot solve mental problems. Right? This is a very important thing. When you have a mental illness, and again, I don't want to over-dramatize it, but we may as well be clear about what's going on here. When you do have a mental illness and there's nothing wrong, it's not like your life is over or anything like that, but you're going through a dysfunctional aspect within your mind, within your soul. And you can't solve it with willpower. You simply cannot solve it with willpower. And the spiral, the first way to get out of the spiral is to recognize that you're in the grip of a biochemical disorder at the moment. The cause of that, the history of that, given that you have given me a lot of information about your current life, but nothing about your childhood, although I can guess that your childhood was wretched. And I would guess that it was wretched in a subtle way more than an overt way, because your friend, who had a wretched childhood and was suicidal and went through or the whole grindhouse of the mental health system, which is pretty wretched to begin with, that is an indication to me that you have a dysfunctional history, right? So your friend who later killed himself after you stopped being his friend, I'm not saying that's causal, but this guy had the history of a very terrible depression. And you also are currently involved with a woman who herself had an absolutely appalling past. And again, you don't give any details, but I'm sure that that is the case. And so given that your people in your life have had themselves had miserable histories, and these are people that you feel you have a lot in common with, well, it's fairly clear to me, and you can certainly correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, like seeks out like. Like self-esteem, like history, seek out like self-esteem and like histories. So without a doubt, your own personal history was full of some appalling messes, however subtle they may have been. Now, I would say, and again, this is just off the top of my head, I don't know enough about your personal history to make anything definitive, and of course, nothing that I say is definitive anyway with regards to this kind of stuff. But my gut tells me this, and I hope that this helps. You have reached the end of a particular road. You have reached the end of a particular road, and you are now stuck in sort of like a ship in low tide. You are stuck until you can get to the next phase of your life. And the next phase of your life is going to have to look very different from the last phase of your life. There are particular challenges that we have to overcome in life, and they can spin us in completely different directions. And you have reached the end of a particular phase, which we could call the intellectual phase, where you pursued philosophy with the desire to understand truth, and obviously you've gained a good deal of technical knowledge and experience. You've written papers, you're a graduate student, you're working on your, or you're working around your PhD dissertation, so you have achieved some success in the intellectual pursuit, but unfortunately the energy that propels all of us, we have to be very sensitive to, right? There's a sort of inner wind that fills our sails and moves us forward in life, which we have to guard and treasure and monitor. And you've hit a dead calm. And from my own experience with these kinds of dead calms, it's not that the wind has died out. The wind has not died out, right? The wind that fills your sails and moves you in a particular direction. What's happened is there's a wind that's blowing against you and you can't tack it, right? So there's a wind that's blowing you forward, which has got you this far, but now there's a wind that's blowing the other way, and you're just going to have to change direction. You're just going to have to change direction. I'm not going to even guess what that direction is going to be, but I'll tell you some of the salient facts that I've experienced through these kinds of changes in direction. Why is it that you don't want to socialize? Well, obviously, if you're depressed, you don't feel like you have a lot to offer. But the problem is that you are carrying, like a guilty secret, the fact that you have lost your ambition, motivation, and capacities in this intellectual realm, right, in the realm of getting your PhD. And that is fairly significant. Obviously, it's very significant that you have friends and family that you feel you need to lie to. And again, I can totally understand that this is nothing, criticism or anything like that, but it's very important to understand that you do feel that you need to lie to the people in your life about what is going on for you, and this is a real cause of the isolation and the depression that you're feeling.
And that is very significant. That and it's sort of one of two possibilities, and I'll tell you which one I think is the actual reality, and you can certainly let me know if I'm way off the mark. Either you are surrounded by wonderful, caring, and loving people, and you just can't bring yourself to tell them what's going on with you. And so, of course, you have to isolate yourself as all depressed people or people who are failing some sort of ought to or expectation within their own lives, either which they've inflicted on themselves or other people have inflicted on them. Either you're surrounded by wonderful, caring, loving people, but you just can't bring yourself to tell them the truth about what it is that's going on in your life. Or you're surrounded by people who don't want to hear the truth about what is going on in your life. And that would seem to be likely to be the case. I think that you are surrounded by people who would not act in a positive manner in order to, like if you told them what was going on in your life, they would not react in a positive, empathetic, and caring manner. And so you're kind of stuck, right? I mean, you're in an impossible situation. You're in an impossible situation, and you're kind of in a spiral. The impossible situation is, I must finish my PhD, combined with, I cannot finish my PhD. I must hide what is going on with my PhD from those around me, or what's not going on with my PhD from those around me, but it's going to come out eventually, right? So you're really setting yourself up to lose the relationships, at least that you've talked about, with the possible exception of your girlfriend, which we could talk about perhaps a little bit later. You're setting yourself up to lose your relationships, right? When we get engaged in falsehoods, fundamental falsehoods with those around us, basically we light a fuse on the relationship, and the fuse can only be defused by coming clean. And I think if you come clean, which I think would be a good thing to do, simply because either the relationships will survive your honesty or they won't. But you don't want to end up in the humiliating position of having people become disgusted with your falsehoods and leave you when you, in fact, want to leave them because they can't handle the truth, right? So it's usually better to speak the truth, and then you feel at least that you have some control over your relationships, or rather the ending of your relationships, your friends or your family or whoever, that you can't talk to about what's going on with you, right? So I would brave that storm. Forget about the PhD. The PhD doesn't matter one little bit. I know that that's a weird thing to hear from me, but what really matters is your personal relationships, and of course, most fundamentally, your relationship with yourself and the truth, right? I mean, I'm sure that you can appreciate the irony of a person who's studying philosophy who does not feel that he can tell the truth to people around him. I mean, that really is quite ironic. That's like somebody studying nutrition who can't talk about positive eating habits to anyone in his life, right? I mean, that would be kind of ironic. A philosopher is somebody who studies the truth and obviously is about communicating the truth. And if you can't tell your friends and your family that you're depressed and making no progress and can't write and have hit the wall in your life, then how is it that you could consider writing an abstract truth paper in a PhD when you can't even tell the truth to the people around you? What conceivable sense would it make to think that you could write and that your emotional energy would support you writing a paper about an abstract truth, right? When you can't even speak the truth around you, what right would you have, or what conceivable capacity could you have to write a philosophical paper about the truth, right? So I think that you need to bring philosophy a little bit more into your life, and I would suggest that braving the storms that will inevitably result from you telling the truth and saying, I'm depressed, certainly, heaven's sake, get to a counselor. I mean, as I said before, you don't have a single symptom of depression that I can think of that you're not exhibiting, right? So get to a counselor, get to a therapist, find someone in the school, find something, whatever you pay, it's worth it, right? Take some extra time at work to pay for the therapy. It's absolutely worth it. Find someone you can trust. And what you need to start building up towards, put the thesis to one side, put the university stuff to one side. The much more important thing that's going on for you right now is your personal relationships and the fact that you feel isolated. And I would say that your unconscious knows the truth about these personal relationships, which is why you're setting them up for such a catastrophic failure in the long run, right? Like if another year or two goes by and people find out that you've been lying to them for a year or two about your thesis, they will react. Almost inevitably, people react not with compassion but with contempt to that kind of situation. So I would definitely start talking to a counselor, start talking to a therapist, recognize that you're depressed. You can't will your way out of a mental illness. And again, not to be overdramatic with the term, but if you're going through a major episode of depression, you simply can't will your way out of it any more than you can will your way out of cancer or insomnia. So get to a counselor, get to a therapist. And I would say that the most important thing that you can start to do is to not worry so much about the abstract philosophy of your thesis topic and start living the truth in your own life. And you'll need a therapist to support you through that process. But you need to start telling the truth about where you are and what's going on for you with the people in your life so that you can find out either A, they're going to react with sympathy in a positive manner and be helpful towards you, in which case that will be excellent and you'll be over the hump with that. You can start to actually lean on people and have them lean on you and have that all intimacy and closeness and so on. But if you can't do that, or if you do reveal the truth about what's going on for you and people react with shock and condemnation and contempt and all the stuff that people do when they have their own issues that they've not dealt with, then you are going to be no longer stuck in your life, right? I mean, you'll be detonating a lot of things, or rather other people will be detonating those things, and through that, a way forward will open up. But I would say be honest with the people in your life, get to a therapist for sure, and that will give you the chance to see philosophy in action, right? There's no point trying to write a thesis paper about some abstract truth when you are not able to tell the truth to the people in your own life. So bring philosophy much more to bear within your own life. See what happens to those relationships. Get to a competent counselor. You may need some medication, although first of all, I would go for a physical checkup and start to speak the truth about my situation to those around me. However agonizing and painful that is, that's what you've got to do. And then see what happens to those relationships when you tell the truth. And I think through there, you will be able to get to a much clearer path in your own life. So do keep me posted and let me know what happens. And thank you for writing such a lengthy and revealing letter. And I appreciate that, and keep me posted. Thanks so much.